In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello and welcome to episode 80 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. And right now, there's just you and me, Lauren.
I know. Everyone's abandoned us.
I know. It's like, should we just sit on the couch and stick the TV on instead or something?
That might be a good idea, given the headspace we're both in right now.
I know, yeah. So I was just telling Lauren on the back channels there that I play football on a Thursday night, and we're recording on a Thursday night tonight. We had a really late kickoff, and we drew 5-5, and we should have won. And I let everybody down right at the end. Glorious opportunity to win the game. You know, go home in glory, start the podcast on a high. And honestly, I fluffed it like you wouldn't believe. And I'm just saying to you, Lauren, wasn't I, that like, I don't understand how professional athletes that like in huge, huge games and huge, huge moments, when they fluff it, how do they get over it? Because I've been home for like an hour now and I'm still mulling over this, like, you know, middle-aged geezers in the northwest of England playing a shockingly bad standard of football, and it's got me miserable. It's like, it's pathetic, isn't it?
I can't imagine, yeah, what professional players must feel, like the pressure. I imagine there's, you know, alcohol and drugs involved.
Oh, no doubt, yeah. And of course, they go home to their like dazzling mansions and
yeah, maybe
trophy other halves and stuff. Yeah, not that my wife's not a trophy wife or anything. Of course, she's lovely. But you've just had a full day of training as well, right?
I have. Yes, I'm doing some ACI security training in Alpha class. So it's been really good. But you know how it is when it's like just training for days and your head's all mush by the end of it. So that's where I am.
So the rest of us, so Mark's away on holiday, I think, or on vacation. Rickatron was, he is over in Russia, but I think he's run out of gas, hasn't he, at something like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
No, I mean, he just got there, so really he's on like East Coast time, so I don't know if I'm buying it, Rick.
Well, I know, but I mean, that's a long journey to get there as well, isn't it? It's brutal.
For sure.
But I thought he was like hardcore traveler, right? You know, that kind of thing should be like nothing for him.
Yeah, he should be used to this. And in Russia, I mean, what is it, like 6 hours, 8 hours, something like that? It's not bad.
Yeah. And then Gabriel's stuck on a call, so kind of hoping Gabriel might be able to join us, because he usually has quite a lot to contribute. And I don't know, the mood needs picking up. You know, I've got an idea to pick the mood up, right? We will go into tech news in just a second, actually. But I've just, about 3 weeks ago, I think I finished reading a trilogy of books. And I only mention this, right, because I know like some people don't like all the small talk on the podcast, but I think the kind of books I read are books that other techies would read, right?
Hunger Games?
So, stuff like that. I have actually got the Hunger Games and I've not read it yet.
Right.
Yeah, I do, yeah, but I've not read it. Well, I say read, I listen.
Right.
I don't ever read. That's like,
it's assumed.
So last year.
Audible.
Yeah. Anyway, so I finished reading a trilogy of books called The Fear Saga. Fear Saga, I don't know how you pronounce it in the States, F-E-A-R.
Yeah, Fear, okay.
But yeah, by a new author called Stephen Baxter, I think he's called. And it's like, so quite often I go down like a mixture of fantasy and science fiction, what have you. But this is pure just science fiction set in the future. Bog standard plot, right? Aliens are coming to take the Earth from us, right? But Lauren, oh my goodness. What an awesome trilogy of books. So if anybody is into that kind of, you know, sci-fi type read and they haven't read The Fear Saga, it is top notch. Like I read the first book, right? Or listened to the first book. And then there were some kind of legal complications between, I think, Podium Publishing and Audible that meant the second and third books had been recorded by the narrator, but they couldn't be uploaded. And I'm like, oh, honestly, I was waiting. Like, in fact, there was a time when I was checking, like, probably every day to see when book two was going to be available. And I had this in the back of my mind all the time, right, that, you know, quite often when you do your first book or the first film in a series is just brilliant and you're like, now what, number two and three, and they're just not going to live up to that standard. Man, I was blown away by two and three. So props to Stephen Baxter and also to the narrator, R.C. Bray. He is one of the best science fiction narrators out there going. if you're into that kind of book, I highly, highly recommend the series. Actually, do you read that kind of book, Lauren, or what do you tend to go for?
Nah, you know what? My favorite is horror. Of movies, oh? Books, I love scary stuff. So, I mean, yeah, I have like Stephen King autographs and all sorts of, a whole bookshelf dedicated to scary books. So people look at me funny a lot, but that's what I got started on. You know, I remember my teachers in third grade asking my mom if they should be worried about me. And my mom was just like, well, at least she's reading.
Absolutely, yeah. Hey, so like, you know, just winding it back to my football for a second, or soccer, the thing that I love about it, right, don't get me wrong, it's not to any great standard, but I love the competition side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I love kind of the nerves beforehand and the fighting for a result and fighting with my teammates, right? And I get nervous every week and I just love it, right? So when you read horror books and watch horror movies and stuff, do you actually get scared and do you thrive on that? Or is it like, nah, this doesn't scare me anymore, but I like the plot. What is it?
Yeah, not anymore. It doesn't scare. It used to when I was really young. And I think that The first one I saw just scared the crap out of me, and it was Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, you know, Freddy Krueger.
Oh, yeah.
And my sister, I mean, it was right around the time, it was very popular. She bought me, like, a Freddy Krueger pillowcase. And Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff had a song about Nightmare on My Street, and Freddy's voice was on it, and she bought the single and just, like, played it over and over just to, like, scare the crap out of me even more, you know? So it was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to embrace it. And It just began. So yeah, no, it doesn't really scare me anymore, but they're just fun, you know, it's fun.
Yeah. Mindless. Oh yeah. No doubt. You know, this is confession time, actually. I love watching films and TV series and stuff like that. But if it's anything that's really scary, like Nightmare on Elm Street and films like that, right. And I don't read books like that. In fact, I watched, was it The Woman in Black?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with
not so long ago.
Harry Potter.
Yeah, really freaked me out, you know. So I can't deal with films like that. They literally do make, you know, obviously nothing scares me.
Right.
But
deep voice.
I would have to watch them during the daytime. And even if I'm in the house on my own, I'm like, you know what, maybe I'll wait till somebody else is home, even if it's just my kids, right?
Yeah.
And I not watch them on a night. I know that. No way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we'll rent cabins in the woods and bring scary movies. And, oh, yeah, wait till dark. It's, I don't know. It's just always been, that does get a little scary. I have a whole cabin story, which I won't get into right now. But, I mean, it was just freaky deaky.
Right. You'll have to share that sometime. So, on my kind of premise that I'm thinking techie people tend to like science fiction books, you obviously don't fit that mold, right? But you're a techie. Am I off the mark there, do you think?
I like sci-fi, but I don't like fantasy. I think you're right, though. I think there is like a lot of sci-fi and a lot of fantasy in our little geekdom.
Right. Fair play. Okay. Well, I tell you what, should we talk about some tech news then?
I think we have to.
We do. So, not a lot, but some interesting stuff, I think, right? So a recent Synergy report is showing HPE as the leading hybrid cloud infrastructure provider. So I guess number one in providing the hardware that backs hybrid clouds for enterprises, yeah? Sticking with HPE and Microsoft invest in Mesosphere in their C round of funding. So I think this C round of funding was something like $73.5 million, taking Mesosphere to a total of $126 million. Really interesting company and technology, Mesosphere, I think. Really hope they make it in the long term. Intel are claiming the industry's densest flash chips, I think. So I only did skim through that article. Doesn't massively interest me. But I know that there's like an arms race going on there, really, isn't there, between the likes of Samsung and then Intel, Micron and people for, you know, who's got the densest flash and who's going to win out as leader in that market. So, yeah, Intel have made moves there. This one is really cool, I think, right? Red Hat has just announced its first 2 billion euro of revenue, which for the open source space, I think is awesome. Now, I can't think of any other open source or 100% open source companies that come anywhere near to that. I could be totally wrong about that, right? I can't think of any off the top of my head. Now, I know they've taken a long time to get to it and what have you, but it was only 4 years ago that they announced their first 1 billion year. So that's a cracking story, I think. Bit of doom and gloom, though. Fidelity are marking down several of the biggest tech-related startups. as kind of doom and gloom does hover over Silicon Valley at the moment. So that's what we've got for news in like the tech space this last week. Anything particularly jump out to you, Lauren, on that?
The first story, I mean, the HPE leading as hybrid cloud hardware supplier. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be shocked, you know, but just seeing HPE and cloud in the same sentence as someone who's leading the pack is a little surprising to me, I guess, with their troubles with HP Helion and, you know, just stuff like that. I don't know, Nigel, do you think that's kind of crazy, or are you just, you know, seems right?
I think I'm with you, yeah. I think, you know what, I'm probably with you on both aspects as well. I was surprised, but then I was like, I probably shouldn't be. And I know Calvin would be like, why would you be surprised?
Because
let's be fair, they are a mainstay of enterprises, right? Mm-hmm. And this is talking about supplying hardware to the enterprise. So we're not talking about hardware for Google's cloud or Amazon or Azure or anything like that, right? But you're right. So they had the kind of HP Helion public cloud failure, if I can call it that. But they did continue Helion as like the kind of private and hybrid cloud play, mm-hmm. didn't they? And, you know, to be fair, they were in early with OpenStack and the Open Compute Initiative as well.
Yeah, they're so huge. They're probably, I mean, it's like 70% HPE people at any of the summons, you know. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, and which is kind of surprising as well in that, I don't know, for me at least, OpenStack and Open Compute and these things all seem really hip and really modern and really kind of pushing the envelope on, you know, designing new architectures and things like that. And I don't necessarily naturally associate HPE with that. I always think that they're
a bit...
No, I totally don't. And maybe that's a bit unfair, but I remember saying on a podcast a while ago, I'd gone from DockerCon in Barcelona to, I think, like the following week to HP Discover in London. And you couldn't get two conferences that were like further apart from each other. Yeah,
right.
Sure, they were both about technology, but the people rocking up and the kind of presentations and stuff were worlds apart. Now, hey, I'd be the first to hold my hand up and say, you know, as awesome as DockerCon is, right, HPE are turning money and revenue and stuff at a much better rate than probably anybody in the container and cloud ecosystem. Well, not cloud, but in the container ecosystem, right? So I certainly shouldn't bash HP on that front, right? You know, saying they've got a lot of boring-looking businessmen in grey suits rocking up because those are the men and women that spend the money at the end of the day, and that's what a business is about, right?
Right.
But there is this kind of almost cool side to HPE as well, if you will, that they do have a lot of players at Open, you know, on the OpenStack. I'm having a brain freeze here, but, you know, not the panels, but
summit.
At the summit and on the board and things like that.
Oh, right, yeah.
So they really, you know, I think they've put themselves out there, certainly. And if they are, you know, if these numbers are to be taken at value, reaping the benefits from making that investment, hell, well done to HPE for that.
And I mean, we're always talking about them too, you know, whether that's good or bad, they're out there. That's for sure, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I am keen to see how the old split turns out in the long run as well. For one, I think it's probably a really good thing because, you know, as companies get massive and massive, and I'm going to make a word up here, but as they get massiver and massiver, they get boringer and boringer, generally speaking, don't they? And I think by splitting them up, Meg's probably done a really, I don't know, at least a really good thing there, right?
Yeah.
Make them a little bit more agile.
I know HPE's actually doing pretty well, but HP's not doing that well, is it? I mean, the other side of the business.
You know what? To be fair, I couldn't comment on that, Lauren. It's not like that's the side of the business that really doesn't hold any interest
right.
to me. I can't stand their printers. Oh, my goodness. They're just the bane of my life. But again, I think that was one of the, I don't want to say master strokes, right? But one of the good things in splitting the business up because, you know what? Consumer products and stuff like that and the kind of business mindset and stuff, totally different to the enterprise. So I don't know.
Boring.
At least well done to HPE on this.
Yep.
Those numbers are to be taken. Yeah, cracking stuff. Now, sticking with HPE, right? So them and Microsoft were both involved in Mesosphere's C round of funding. Now, $73.5 million is not to be sniffed at, okay? Quite a lot of money, taking their total funding to date, I think, up to $126 million.
That's not bad.
And, I mean, that's good.
I'm surprised HPE is such a big part of this. And I know, like, but hey, good for them again.
I think they're seeing for the kind of large-scale hybrid cloud environments that data center operating system from the guys at Mesosphere is looking like it's shaping up to be a pretty classy tool.
So I know you're like a Docker guy, right? And you know, I'm always trying to learn more about containers, but you really like Mesosphere, however you say that.
Yeah, so I'll hold my hands up straight away and say I'm not an expert on using it right, but I think we're almost doing them an injustice by saying, you know, are they a container orchestration and clustering platform, you know, like Swarm or something mm-hmm. like that? Because, yeah, they are, but they're also so much more. I think it's fair to say that, you know, they're a cloud operating system, right? And as part of that, they can manage and orchestrate containers and they can play with big data and stuff like that. I don't know. If I had more time in the day, I would spend a lot more time looking at it. The problem for me in that space, right, is I work quite a lot with Docker Swarm, okay? And I tinker a bit with Kubernetes. And I would love to tinker a bit with Mesosphere as well. And I did have a tinker with it a while ago when it was maybe a bit more complicated than it is now, because, you know, these tools are always a bit complicated early on in their life. But I just wish there were more hours in the day. If there were, it would be right up there at the top of my list to spend more time on. But I think, if I can compare it to Docker Swarm, right, I think I'm right, or being fair to them, to say it's a lot more than Docker Swarm, right? The container orchestration part of it is only a part of it. And I think HPE and certainly Microsoft, right, see this as a potential major player in the future of large-scale cloud environments. I mean, this is the second major investment that Microsoft have made, right? And I'm not talking financial here, right? But I know that they partnered with Mesosphere probably about this time last year, maybe more towards the summer, I can't remember. But certainly, you know, about a year ago, they started leveraging Mesosphere for a bunch of stuff inside of Azure. And this is kind of, at least in my opinion, right, this is a bit of a rubber stamp from Microsoft saying, look, we started integrating it with some of our Azure services and what have you last year. We like what we see, so we're putting our money where our mouth is. Now, I don't know how much each company actually invested, but the fact that Microsoft started using and deploying the technology and integrating with it last year and are coming around this time and saying, you know what, we're going to put some cash into this, I think is a massive, massive rubber stamp for Mesosphere. So, you know what, I think for cloud orchestration, container orchestration, all that kind of stuff at scale in the future, that could be a massive, massive player.
You think there could be an acquisition in the future?
I mean, always possible. I would kind of hope not. I'd like to see them stay independent, to be honest. Like I would like to see Docker stay independent as well. I think VMware is probably the classic example, right? And if Mesosphere were to be picked up, I'd hope that it would be an acquisition of the style of VMware, right, where they can continue to operate independently. Mm-hmm. Because I see a lot of people wanting to, well, look, right now I see a lot of third parties wanting to plug into Kubernetes, right? That seems to be the main one, okay? Then Mesosphere and Swarm. Now, by staying independent, I just think it helps the ecosystem grow a bit more. Certainly, if let's just say for argument's sake, now they're not going to, right, because they're having their own challenges raising money to acquire VMware. But let's say Dell picked them up, right, mm-hmm. or IBM, right? Mm-hmm. Then suddenly I don't think you see the kind of, certainly not the financial investment and probably not the technology investment and integration from the likes of Cisco and HPE and people like that going forward. So I don't know. I think by staying independent, it keeps the game fresher and it keeps their options open. It lets them innovate against their schedule a little bit more than like a big parent company. And it you know, as soon as you're acquired, I don't know, I just get the feeling that doors close sometimes for opportunities to partner and the likes.
Right. Now what if Oracle buys them? What do you think about that?
Honestly, I was depressed after my 5-all football match. That would be tragic. That's all I'm going to say. That would be a travesty.
Where companies go to die.
Yeah, gosh. So.
But, you know, I mean, that could be Oracle, I would imagine, is looking to make some sort of acquisition for a cloud, right? I mean, they have, but some bigger ones.
You know what? If they were to do that, then I think the whole industry would rally even more around the likes of Kubernetes and Swarm and what have you to say, look, we need a viable alternative. A little bit like OpenStack is the kind of enterprise alternative to stopping the bleed to the public clouds of Azure and AWS and stuff like that. Yeah. Hey, sticking with kind of open sourcey type things, right? I love this story about Red Hat.
That's now, amazing.
Isn't it just? I mean, they've been around for a long time, right? So, in fact, actually, that's probably a positive. I like the way that they've kind of ground out the business that they are today, right? You know, it's not been a flash in the pan overnight. You know, we're not thinking, oh, is this a, are these numbers sustainable, right? Because they have built this business over a lot of years with, you know, solid business practices and a lot of hard work and what have you. And I love to see success stories like that. And they're absolutely the poster child for the whole open source space, I think. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, like the likes of Docker and people like that that are, you know, basing on open source products would like to get there a lot faster. But good grief, $2 billion. And the fact that, right, they announced their first $1 billion year of revenue only 4 years ago. So they've gone from $1 billion to $2 billion in 4 years. Pretty impressive, I think, as well.
Do you think it makes a difference that, you know, okay, so Red Hat is what, you said 20 years old? Maybe even older.
I know,
sure.
I didn't say that, but maybe it's got to be. In fact, let me just, I'm going to Google that.
I wonder if timing, you know, that kind of slow-paced, you know, you could do that back in the 80s or 90s, and you know, companies now like Mesosphere and Docker and whatever, everything just is moving a lot quicker now. You know, Red Hat was kind of a grower, not a shower, and it has obviously worked out well for them.
Totally, yeah, you're right. Just real quick, Wikipedia says 1993, so they're 23 years old.
Wow.
And yeah, and I think that, you know, the amount of money that's been thrown into technology and stuff these days by businesses is a lot more, right? So it's a lot easier to get to these bigger numbers these days. You know, we live in a world where no technology, no business for probably 99% of businesses out there, right?
Right.
And that certainly wasn't the case 10, 15, certainly 20 years ago. You know, having a website and having email and stuff like that was a nice to have, whereas it's not. Yeah, do you remember that?
I do, actually.
I know. But no, now, because we're so invested in technology and, you know, the world stops turning without technology, a lot more money gets thrown at it.
Well, and it's still not like they're going anywhere. It's not like Linux is going away or OpenStack or any of the things that they're kind of, you know, their core business. That's only getting bigger, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. You know what? I'm glad you mentioned OpenStack there as well, because at least one of the articles that I had to skim through was citing their OpenStack cloud as, you know, being... how do I put this? Because they didn't actually break out numbers to say, you know, of that $2 billion in revenue, such and such amount was attributed to OpenStack sales or anything. They didn't go into that detail, but OpenStack was cited. You know what? A little bit similar to what maybe we said about HPE right at the top of the show, saying, you know, their early investment in OpenStack and Open Compute for HPE is maybe showing or bearing fruit now. And, you know, probably the same now for Red Hat. Mm-hmm. Certainly going forward, I imagine that's going to be core to them. And certainly, you know, a lot of their major deals and account wins and things like that are probably going to be OpenStack related in the future. So again, look, I mean, I've been quite critical of the whole OpenStack thing in the past, thinking, you know, it's still too complicated. And, you know, how viable is it compared to something like the public cloud offerings that we already have out there? But it seems there's a huge need for OpenStack, right?
Well, and if you have Red Hat kind of doing it for you, basically, and much like their Linux model, right? It's all supported. It's all, you know, there are services surrounding it. So it's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a little easier. I imagine it's still hard, but.
No doubt. Yeah. But same for HPE as well, I guess. Yeah. But it's that kind of the need for enterprises to be able to build their own, like, private and hybrid clouds to be able to compete with the likes of Amazon Web Services and IBM and Azure and what have you is driving that kind of, you know, almost, and I could totally open myself up here, right? But I think that's kind of driving OpenStack in some way. And I mean that in the fact that if there wasn't that need, I think OpenStack would have fallen by the wayside just due to its complexities and what have you. But we absolutely need it, right? So therefore, it cannot die, and everybody has to, like, make it work. So when we get to the point where, you know what, okay, it's probably never going to be as easy as the public cloud services that we've got out there, but when it becomes a lot easier, does OpenStack then suddenly just grow wings and fly?
Just takes off.
Yeah. I wonder if it does, because people are deploying it and are, you know, working hard to deploy it and work at it at the moment, while it is still hard. So when it becomes easy, good grief. I mean, you mentioned Linux a few seconds ago, Lauren, right? So Linux, okay, arguably it still is a little bit hard at some things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Linux used to be rock hard to do. I mean, I don't know if you've ever compiled your own Linux kernel before. I mean, that used to be like really common for people that worked in Linux teams. Who compiles their own Linux kernel now? Very, very rare, right?
Yeah.
And then
I can't say I've ever done that.
No.
Download Ubuntu, right? And I'm off and running.
Yeah. But the thing is, right, with the advent of public cloud, it became even easier. Point and click, and you spin up a Linux instance.
Yeah.
And it's just there for you.
Small, medium, well, large. Here you go.
Exactly, right? And I think, at least, right, Linux is the king of the cloud when it comes to, you know, what kind of platform you're going to build your cloud applications and stuff on. I really think Linux is the king these days. And for the longest time, Linux was like, certainly in the enterprise, right, the traditional enterprise, was more of a bit part player compared to Windows, I think. You know, because we used to have, didn't we? We had big Unix, right? AIX and HPUX and Solaris in the day, right? And then Windows was making its waves in there. And Linux kind of would be in a little corner somewhere and what have you. Whereas now, Linux is like freaking everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And in part because it's easier. Go on.
I agree. You know, I actually hadn't worked with Linux until like my last job as a customer. And then, you know, we were half Linux, half Windows. And it was, you know, the only thing, again, I have to go with Windows for Active Directory. But beyond that, yeah, I mean, Linux was awesome because you didn't have to restart everything every time. And yeah, it's just agile.
Yeah, and I absolutely think it's the king of the cloud, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
Microsoft agrees with you.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And if we get to the point where OpenStack becomes easier like that, and we know we've talked about companies that offer OpenStack as a managed service as well, as and when OpenStack becomes easier and easier, man, that thing could fly.
Well, and the difference is, too, I mean, you meet a Linux administrator 20 years ago, and they were, you know, they didn't want to talk to you, and they're talking above your head. And we're in a different state now, the evolution of the people in technology. We're actually somewhat social and don't mind, you know, not being a jerk to everyone.
Speak
once in a while.
For yourself. Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
I mean, you go on a forum, kind of, and it's a lot easier now these days.
Yeah, do you know what? I remember the Linux forums and stuff in the past. Man, if there was any way that you could have found something out by reading the manual, you had like people hollering, you like,
go to the man
why
pages.
Are you asking this? It's on page 635. I'm like, really? Come on, help us out here. And yeah, it's worlds apart from that now.
Yeah. Oh, the man pages. I dread. I dread that. Yeah. Who's going to sit there and read like 1,000 pages? It's the internet.
No. Absolutely. You know what? I think that, you made me think a really kind of a good thing there, actually, that yes, Linux probably has got easier, but you know what? What would I, and I, okay, so I'm not a Linux guru. I'm not an anything guru at the end of the day, right?
you and me both.
But you're right. But I can find my way around with Linux. You know, I use the Linux command line probably every day.
I know CD, yep.
What's that?
I know CD.
Yeah, right. Okay. So I know a little bit more than that. But I tell you what, Lauren, man, if there wasn't Google, I would not be as productive as I am now. It is very, very rare that you can't find an answer to something very, very quickly on Google these days.
Oh, I am convinced there is no answer you cannot find. Now, it may not be very quickly, but I know that there is an answer out there somewhere, you know?
Yeah. You just got to be able to find it. I totally agree with that. Honestly, if there was no Google, woo!
Oh, I don't know how people did it like back in the day. That's just,
I know,
crazy.
You had to be proper experts back then, didn't you?
You had to like read like, yeah, primers and stuff.
Yeah. File kernels and stuff.
What remember it.
Yeah. Hey, so this kind of doom and gloom around, well, I guess probably the wider stock market and tech startups and what have you. So there was Fidelity marking down a bunch of the biggest kind of startups, you know, those that are over a billion, valued at over $1 billion, I should say. And apparently there's over 150 of them that are that size. Yeah, marking them down, saying, look, we think the future's quite bleak for them. I also read another article saying, what was that? Oh, yeah, it's saying pretty much most of the tech startups are lousy and overrated and not going to do anything. The bunch of crap, really, is what the article was saying. Now, I feel like I'm a little bit withdrawn from that being over here in the UK. Now, I know you're not in the valley, like the heart of it, but being over there in the States, do you like pick up on any of this vibe? Is there like a, I don't know, is there an undertone or a feeling, generally speaking, that things are on a bit of a downer?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I'm actually sitting in the valley right now on Cisco's campus. So, you know, I was talking to someone the other day and I was just thinking, you know what, let's just all keep our heads down and go to work because we just got to survive 2016, I think, you know. I don't know if it's the rest of time that we need to be concerned about, but I think it is going to be a down year. And I mean, it is true. Like, if you read TechCrunch or any of that stuff, I mean, it's just blog after blog about some ridiculous startup, like, or, you know, The Well, for example, you know. What do we need with these little gadgets that are never going to sustain us? Or, and another thing is everything Uberized, you know. Everything gets delivered, and there are a million different companies doing it. And there's just no way to sustain all these companies.
It's interesting, right, because I had a conversation, it was quite a while ago, actually, but talking about, like, all these things that we take for granted in life today, right? Like, I don't know, like, just Amazon Prime next day deliveries, right? Mm. I mean, oh, my goodness. If I have to wait more than a day for something, I'm like, it feels like it's the Stone Age. I'm like, really? But the discussion was, right, that, you know, at the end of the day, we need food to eat, we need to be warm, and we need medical care and stuff like that. Those are the kind of core things, right? Mm-hmm. And everything else is fluff. And I was kind of like, while I get that, you know what? Life and society in general, I'm speaking in general here, right? And feel free to disagree with me, right? It's never been better though, right?
Yeah.
You know, don't we live in like a better time than we ever have? Not just like the conveniences that we have. And I appreciate, right? Look, maybe I'm speaking about the Western world here, right? And I'm not ignorant to the challenges that people have in life, okay, right, or anything like that. But I think...
But anyone listening to this podcast...
yeah, probably. In the world that we live and breathe in, right, you know, life has never been better. We've got all the conveniences, the medical care, connectivity, you know. In fact, my wife's sister lives in Colorado, and they're on Skype and stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And we've just got a great life. And, you know, we're more tolerant, at least in most of the world, about people's differences and things than we've ever been. It's like we live in a great world.
Yeah, I can order chicken wings at 2 a.m.
Hell yeah. But you know what? So much of that is based on access to information, Google and stuff like that, right? It's being able to get things quickly and promptly, you know, so that our lives can go on, our businesses can go on. Because I'm a massive believer, right, that if you were to take away Google and free access to information and the ability to, quote unquote, educate ourselves, right, we would roll back to the dark ages. Now, I think that's some of the problems that we have in these parts of the world where, you know, again, I want to be careful here, but that we would consider a little bit backwards. It is in large part the fact that they don't have access to the things that we have access to. Yes, I think information is probably the big one, right? But everything else, and, you know, suddenly it's like, gosh, life would actually kind of suck if we had to go back to just the basics, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there are some really interesting technologies out there, especially with IoT, right? And I was reading this article about pervasive wireless.
Passive wireless, was it?
Thank you. Yeah, passive wireless, where you don't necessarily need a power, any sort of power in a device to get wireless from it. And I was thinking about the story Someone told me from Cisco that in whatever African country, I don't remember which one, it took them 6 months to go check like all the water taps in this area. And the truck would just go from water tap to see if it worked. And mm-hmm. that was the best thing they had. Well, now with IoT and maybe something like passive wireless, they can put a little sensor on it, see if it works. And then 2 weeks later, you know, your water is working again. Now, before, yeah. if your tap broke, you had to wait maybe 6 months to mm-hmm. for the truck to come around. So, I mean, just things like that, I think, are pretty amazing and helpful in, you know, more than me getting chicken wings on a Wednesday at 2 a.m.
That is important, though, right?
It's very important sometimes.
I could murder some chicken wings right now. But I think so, my point in kind of bringing that up was that while a lot of these things that, you know, we get funding for and we're like, do we really need that? They quite often, well, maybe quite often is probably not the right terminology, right? But every once in a while, these things do turn out to be like life-changing, if yeah. I can say that.
Yeah, they may lead to something that could be life-changing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a lot of the new healthcare stuff that's coming out from startups, I mean, that's really interesting stuff. And it could be helpful and maybe, you know, even bring down our healthcare costs and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. All right, then. So let's wind out the show with a hot or not and a bit of a strange one. I hope you don't mind if I take the lead on this one this week, Lauren.
Please do.
You are like the master of hot or not. But I want to know, right? So I don't know whether I read it or somebody said something or what, but I came across something recently that said we are living in the golden age of podcasts, right?
So there's a podcast out there for everything.
Hell yeah. So I want to know, Lauren, are podcasts hot or not?
I have to absolutely go with hot. I have been listening to podcasts. I mean, I don't even listen to the radio anymore. I've been listening to podcasts for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And, you know, I listen, not all tech, like I've got a lot of comedy and some, you know, financial podcasts and a big Motley Fool fan. I can basically multitask. That's what I feel like with a podcast. I can learn about something while I'm driving or in the shower or drinking on the porch. And, you know, it's amazing. And I probably listen to at least 40 podcasts a week.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. That's my guess, 30 to 40.
That is intense.
Yeah. Wow.
What's your favorite one?
I don't have a favorite. You know, it depends on the genre. Well, in tech we trust, of course.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But it depends on the genre. So I'm a Motley Fool fan for financial. Yeah.
So I've got a question, right, about podcasts and things in general then. So do you ever have, and if you do you like it now, downtime, where you're actually doing nothing? Or do you feel like you always have to be, or you always want to be listening to something or reading something or doing something?
Yes, I am actually chastised about not being able to like just sit quietly. The TV's always, I'm always multitasking somehow. Either the TV's on and I'm, you know, writing a white paper or something, or, you know, I'm listening to a podcast, you know, in the shortest, it could be like I have 30 seconds of quiet time before I have to go do something else, and I will hit play on the podcast because it's so easy. It's on my phone, you know, it's always with me. What about you? You have any
I am exactly
time?
The same. Mm-hmm. No, like I can't remember the last time I just sat down and did nothing. Like, I find it really hard. I have to be doing something, whether it's, you know, directly work related or whether it's a podcast or whether it's reading something in the tech news or, you know what, and I know this might be considered downtime, but listening to a book, but I literally cannot not have my mind engaged in something. So like, for instance, today my wife was out with the kids, it's Easter holiday, and she'd taken them to one of these big trampolining places where they've got like, I don't know, 100 trampolines in the room.
Yeah.
And we've got some family coming to stay with us tomorrow. So I spent about 2.5 hours cleaning the house. And I cannot clean the house without either listening to a book or a podcast or something like that. I just cannot do it. And you know what? Wind the clock back like 5 years. And I used to love, I mean, it's rare that we actually hand wash dishes or anything now, I guess. But I used to love like washing the dishes and hoovering and stuff. and just have myself to myself, just think about stuff, you know. Can't do it anymore.
Now, do you feel guilty or bored?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I feel like, well, I don't know if guilty is the right word, right? But I think I'm wasting time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I want, and I don't know whether it's because, you know, we have this drive that we want to achieve things and do things and accomplish things, and whether we feel like we're wasting time or whatever. But I am like, man, I am wasting time if I'm not doing stuff. And don't get me wrong, I don't find it a chore to listen to podcasts or to learn or to turn my laptop on and play with some new technology. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really struggle with just that. Now, it's a bit different if, like, we're out with friends or something, or we've got friends around. That's totally different. Although, I will, you know, I'm prone to picking my phone up and stuff and surfing around and seeing what's going on and what have you. If there's a lull in the conversation or if we're talking about something that I'm not interested in. And my wife always, you know, nudges me and will quite often call me out and say, yeah, that's a bit rude. But I think, you know, in society, we're getting to the point where that's like par for the course.
Now,
and
see,
we don't consider it rude anymore, unless it's my parents, right, of course.
No, I'm with your wife, though. Like, if I'm having dinner with someone and they're picking up the phone. Now, if there's a group of us or whatever and it's like a work dinner, that's different. Like, who cares? But yeah, if I'm out on like a date or, you know, I find it really, like, I get offended, like, kind of pissed off if someone's looking at their phone the entire time, you know. But yeah, I guess I'm old school too, like that. I'm very polite, I guess.
Yeah.
Hard to believe.
Well, you know, coming back to the, are podcasts hot or not, right? So I think they're hot as well. And I think it's because there are more and more people that feel like they have to be bettering themselves and learning something and consuming something all the time, right?
Do you have a favorite?
No, I probably don't. You know what? I'm actually, so I'm saying that I think podcasts are hot. I do listen to quite a lot, but I go through fits and starts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I probably haven't listened to a podcast for about, I don't know, maybe a month now,
mm-hmm.
just because I've been really hot into listening to books. Okay.
I want to listen to books, but then I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get so behind on my podcasts.
Right, exactly. So I flip between the two. I'm like, oh man, I'm missing out on what's going on, because you learn a shed load from listening to podcasts, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. They,
absolutely. So I'll get to the point probably in a couple of weeks where I'm like, well, I need to binge on podcasts again. And I'll do that for like maybe a month or so. And then I'll be like, well, you know what? I could do with reading a book again.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of flip between the two. But the whole idea of like such easily consumable content when you're on the go, in the car, on the train, on the plane, walking the dog, doing the dishes, doing the washing, is just, oh man, if that wasn't there in life, I'd be like, a massive part of my life would be missing.
Yeah, I think we'd be really bored. Like, maybe we should go to yoga or something, because it might be an issue.
Well, actually, so I read a book a while ago called 10% Happier. I know it sounds like one of those self-help books and stuff, but it was actually kind of good. It was by this guy who was used to be a news anchor at CNN or somewhere. Anyway, he got really into yoga, and he, you know, went away to one of these camps where you're out in the sticks and you've no contact with society for a couple of weeks and what have you. And I do remember reading the book thinking, you know what, that actually does sound kind of cool, but it is like the polar opposite of the kind of lives we live today.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether I could reconcile the two, you know, because I love the lives that we live today, so full of content and interaction and stuff like that. I read the book and I kind of thought I could understand the benefits that he was talking about of, you know, a bit of seclusion, a bit of like, you know, really clear your mind and detox it in a way. But I don't know. I don't think I'd actually want that. I think they would kick you off the course if you did. So yeah, the golden age of podcasting, here we are recording a podcast. So yeah, so you know what, I think we should thank our listeners, actually, because I got, you know, there's more requests come through for stickers and stuff like that. And no listeners, no podcast. At the end of the day, we said no technology, no business.
Yep.
No listeners, no podcast. So
thanks
thank
for
you everybody
Mom.
For listening. Yeah. And let us know what you're thinking, if we need to do stuff better and things like that, or if we're just doing awesome, you know. We love interacting with you. I used to love doing the stuff on the LinkedIn channels. That's a bit quiet these days. But yeah, a bit of interaction is great as well.
Yeah, iTunes comments would be great. You know, it's great to hear that feedback. Yeah, not even looking for a ranking or anything like that. Like, I would love to know what we can do better. Like, read the articles in advance or something along those lines.
Yeah, if you guys in Tech We Trust could do a bit of preparation in future. So they actually have a clue what you're talking about, that might help. Okay, well, thanks, Lauren. It's been a blast. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And tune in again next week, where hopefully there'll be more of us back on the show. Hopefully the Rickatron will be home and have the batteries recharged, though I doubt it. He is always on the road, isn't he?
Yeah.
Farley should be back. Or maybe we'll get some comments saying we should have gone on the couch, the virtual couch, stuck the television instead. Hey, I tell you what as well, speaking of interaction from listeners, you know what, if you have any hot or not ideas that you'd like us to discuss, we are all game for them.
Absolutely. I can't continue my streak alone.
No, certainly not.